Welcome back to Topical Currents Thursday edition. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper still recovering from a severe back injury, and we truly hope to have him back very soon. It's unthinkable that everything we thought we knew about dietary fats is wrong, and that the past 60 years of low-fat nutrition advice has amounted to a vast, uncontrolled experiment on the entire population with disastrous consequences for our health. But journalist Nina Teicholz has spent 9 years investigating this issue and has concluded just that. She claims that more, not less, dietary fat, including saturated fat, leads to better health, wellness, and fitness. In her book, The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. And she joins us from NPR in New York City. Welcome to you, Nina Teicholz.
Thanks for having me.
Very good to have you. Also with us today, Dr. Neil Barnard. Dr. Barnard is a nutrition researcher, author, health advocate, and adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine. And he joins us with another view. Welcome to you, Dr. Barnard.
Hello. It's good to be with you today.
Good to have you back. You've been on the program before. And finally with us, as she is every Thursday, Cordon Bleu chef, author, and syndicated columnist, Linda Gassenheimer. Welcome to you, Linda.
Nice to be here with you. And we also have our favorite wine guy with us, as we do each Thursday, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. Now, Fred gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column that you can read in the Miami Herald, and you can also read Fred's wine column in the Herald. Fred, what's in your glass today?
Well, it's summer now, so I'm going to talk about summer wines.
Sounds good to me. It sounds like after this we may need a couple more a glass of wine.
Welcome, Fred.
Thanks. Hi.
Hi. Nina Teicholz, let's begin with you, if we could. Your book really upends all of the conventional wisdom. How and why do you believe our nutrition policy got it so wrong?
Well, my book... To establish my book, I went back and looked at all the original research that underlies our dietary policies, starting in the 1950s when the United States was in a state of panic about the rising tide of the heart disease epidemic, which had come out of nowhere to be the nation's number one killer. President Eisenhower himself had a heart attack in 1955, was out of the Oval Office, and experts were really desperate for answers. And there was one scientist who came up with the idea that saturated fats were what caused heart disease. They would raise total cholesterol and clog your arteries, giving you a heart attack. That scientist, his name is Ansel Keys, he was a very forceful, powerful person and was able to get that idea implanted into the American Heart Association. Our very first anti-saturated fat dietary guidelines were published in 1961. The National Institutes of Health got on board. By 1980, the U.S. government, the first USDA dietary guidelines were low-fat for the entire nation. So I go back and chart through all of that history, and that the fundamental point is that when that first guideline came out in 1961, there was no scientific proof for that idea. And the science that was then done to try to prove that saturated fat and fat cause heart disease and other health problems, it just was always poor. I mean, in my book, I really go through the many methodological problems with those early studies. And other scientists have now gone back and reexamined those early studies, which is why saturated fats has been in the headlines recently, because those two separate groups of scientists have concluded, as I have, that saturated fats cannot, the evidence to show that saturated fats cause heart disease is, the case has really collapsed. That evidence is not strong and really doesn't establish that point. So we've been avoiding meat, cheese, butter, dairy, eggs for 50 years and based on evidence that really was non-existent.
Can I ask you, Nina, this is Linda. Are you saying that, I'm not sure, I need help here and I want Dr. Barnard to help us with this because we... People are bombarded by so much information all the time. It's hard to know what to eat
yeah.
or whatever. But I'm not sure they said never eat any meat or never have any saturated fat. It was I assumed it was the amounts. But then we started eating carbs instead, and that was a problem. But I want to go to Dr. Barnard at this point and hear his viewpoint on this.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for having this program. There are certain things that we know that are very, very clear and are really important. if somebody says, oh, fat doesn't matter, so butter and meat and cheese should be in your diet, here's the problem. We know very clearly, and Nina would agree with this, that colorectal cancer, which is a terrible killer, kills 50,000 people every year, is convincingly linked to eating what are called processed meats and also red meats. That's number one. So when I say processed meats, I'm talking about bacon, sausage, ham, deli slices. The evidence is overwhelming that people who eat those things have a higher risk of this deadly form of cancer, red meat too. We also know that when you divide people into different categories, people who never eat animal products versus people who eat them a lot and people who are in between, the less you eat in the way of animal products, the lower your risk of diabetes by a long margin, and the healthier your body mass index. So people who who eat meat a lot tend to be the heaviest group with the highest risk of diabetes. On the other hand, people who eat animal products never tend to have a very healthy body weight and low risk of diabetes. But the icing on the cake of evidence is what happens in a clinical trial where you actually put it to the test. And back 10 years ago, the National Institutes of Health funded our research team here at the Physicians Committee to test a completely plant-based diet for people who had diabetes and health problems. And we tested it head-to-head against an American Diabetes Association diet, and the plant-based diet won in every measure. People lost weight, their diabetes got better, their blood pressure went down, and we now believe that the evidence is extremely strong, whether you look at observational studies, intervention studies, whatever, that the less you get animal products in your diet, the better you're going to be. And when people give us this tantalizing idea that you can smoke cigars and sometimes you ought to have a steak, that's giving us a message we would like to be true, but it just doesn't hold up.
Nina, do you want to comment on this? Because I believe you say that a high-fat diet is best even for those with diabetes, which is definitely contrary to what the studies that Dr. Barnard has been involved in.
Right. So I need to talk first about the epidemiological evidence, which is what Dr. Barnard brought up first. Epidemiological evidence is the kind of study where they can only ever show association, not causation. In the best that epidemiological studies can do is if there's a huge impact, like for smokers and non-smokers, heavy smokers show 30-fold more likelihood of getting lung cancer than non-smokers. That's what epidemiological evidence can show. In fact, the epidemiological evidence that's used to show that red meat causes cancer, any kind of cancer and any kind of meat, the effects are tiny. It's 1.29 is the relative risk of getting cancer from eating meat. And that's less than the National Cancer Institute itself says we should not even look at a relative risk that's under 2. So they're tiny effects, and they're huge confounders in those studies, because who is eating the most red meat now in our society today? Only somebody who disregards every single doctor, nutritionist, every recommendation that you've been given over the last 50 years. So those are people who don't go to the doctor, don't take care of their health, don't do yoga, meditate, don't, you know, those are what we call the non-adherers. They look bad in many, many ways. And all of those other factors confound their health. So to say that they're being sick from their red meat eating is just can't be supported by the weakness of that evidence. So that's the epidemiological studies that, again, can only show causation, only can show association, not causation. Now, to get to the clinical trials, so the clinical trial that Dr. Barnard mentioned, that was comparing his diet to the low-fat diet. I think it's fair to say any diet pretty much looks better than the standard American Heart Association, USDA low-fat diet, high carbohydrates, looks bad for everyone. Almost any diet that is tested against that diet looks better. However, there have been clinical trials, again, the kind of tests that you can do in science that really shows causation, that compare very low-fat diets like the standard one we have today, and high-fat, low-carbohydrate diets. And in those clinical trials, of which there have been not just one, but many, many rigorous, long-term, large clinical trials over the past decade, the high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet always looks best in terms of the outcomes for heart disease and diabetes and obesity. And that's just very well established.
Okay, can I have a question?
Let me jump in.
Go ahead, Doctor.
If you don't mind.
Right.
There are several things that were mentioned that are just completely wrong. First, it does sound like the increased risk of 1.29. That sounds small, doesn't it? But what that means is a 29% increase, or 1.21. That sounds small. That's a 21% increase. That number is the increased risk that a person runs of having, developing colon cancer or colorectal cancer from eating just one serving of processed meat on a daily basis. So let's say on Mondays you have bacon. Tuesdays maybe you have a hot dog. Maybe the next day you might have pizza with deli slices on it. Many people have these 2 and 3 and 4 times a day. So that 21% increased risk of developing colon cancer, is that something you would wish on your children?
No, but again,
somebody you love. And secondly,
again,
when we're talking about the studies, the epidemiologic studies, researchers have tackled this very issue. And one of the populations that helps us out here is looking at Seventh-day Adventists. There's been a huge literature on them because they're all non-smokers, they're all non-drinkers, they avoid caffeine, but some do eat meat and some don't. And you see a striking difference. The meat eaters are much heavier than the vegans in the group, and the people who eat, say, fish are kind of halfway between the two. And the diabetes risk is dramatically lower in the people who eat no animal products, even when you adjust the data for physical activity and everything else you can find. The people who don't eat animal products have about half the risk of developing diabetes compared to others. And that's then proven when we bring in people, as we do in our work here, in the study we did with GEICO, in the work we do with other sites, where we bring in people who are eating meat, and they're eating the butter and cheese that other people cheerlead for, and they say, I've got diabetes, I don't want to go blind, what should I do? We take the animal products out of their diet, they improve dramatically. And now this, don't get me wrong, I am not suggesting that the alternative is a sugary, gooey, junk food diet. A healthy diet is 4 food groups: vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans. You ought to take a source of vitamin B12 as a supplement. That's a good idea. But if you do that, that's a healthy regimen. And the more you add meats, dairy products to your diet, the worse off your risk is going to be.
We're going to have to take a short break. Nina, we promise we'll let you respond when we come back.
Okay.
It's Topical Currents. We are talking about, well, the big fat lie. Fat, is it good for us? Is it not good for us? And we're hearing both sides of the issue with journalist Nina Teicholz. She has written The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. And Dr. Neil Barnard is an associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine. We have Linda Gassenheimer, chef, author, and syndicated columnist, and, of course, wine columnist Fred Tasker. We'll be right back. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. We're visiting with journalist Nina Teicholz, who's written The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. Along with her, we have Dr. Neil Barnard, who is a nutrition researcher, author, health advocate, and an adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine. We have chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer, wine columnist Fred Tasker, and we're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly.
We don't know what. We are
we
confused.
We don't know about that.
We promised Nina a chance
to respond
to Dr. Barnard. So, Nina, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to get back. I mean, the epidemiological evidence that he's using to bolster the case for a vegetarian vegan diet, that's really at the heart of what we're talking about here. So, and it's just so important to understand how these studies cannot be used to show causation. And that's because they're incredibly weak studies, like the Seventh-day Adventist study that he cited. That's a study where, you know, they sample somebody's diet once in 20 years. They ask you, you know, what did you eat last week, last month? And then they use that and correlate that against the next 20 years of your life. So these kinds of, I mean, which is just it's very weak kind of data. That particular study was also conducted out of La Loma Linda University, which is the home of Seventh-day Adventists. So there's a, you know, tremendous bias already built into that study. But in general, epidemiological studies, they are used, they are the kind of study that can be used to suggest hypotheses, which then need to be tested in clinical trials. And just to give you a sense of how bad epidemiological can be for the use of public health recommendations, I mean, it was epidemiological evidence that set the entire nation on hormone replacement therapy and vitamin E supplements. Both of those had to be retracted when those ideas were finally tested in clinical trials. And I might say, you know, with great harm to people, because it turned out hormone replacement therapy actually made women sick or, you know, shortened their lives. But in any case, that was all based on nutritional epidemiology.
Can I break in for a minute here?
Yeah.
As a layperson, because we want to make sure we all understand this. Why does it have to be an extreme? I mean, why does it have to be no fats at all or all fats? I mean, is that what we're talking about?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think there's just an overwhelming amount of evidence that I lay out in my book that shows that, you know, that a no-fat diet or a very low-fat diet is not healthy. And there's virtually no, except for in real periods of starvation in human history, like post-World War II or the Irish potato famine, there's just no evidence of historical evidence of humans eating that way. And Americans used to eat about 40% of their diet as fat before that American Heart Association recommendation started in 1961. So, you know, we could say that's a moderate amount of fat, and that was certainly before the epidemics of obesity and diabetes. So we could certainly return to that. And a high-fat diet, as I describe, a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet, that diet has just been shown to be spectacularly good at helping people to lose weight and even reverse diabetes, help them people get off their medication, and to improve heart disease risk factors. So, not everybody needs to go on that diet, but if you're sick, it happens to be a very effective diet.
Right. Well, Dr. Bernard, what's your take here?
Yeah. Well, first of all, back to something that Nina mentioned. She's right in saying that observational studies just give you a first glimpse at where you want to go. Now, sometimes they're very good and very large, but when possible, you do want to follow up with a randomized trial. That's what we've done with diabetes. We did the longest running diet trial ever published of this type. And what we've shown is that when you get the animal products out of your diet, everything gets better and your weight drops. Despite the fact that you're eating more healthy carbs than before, you're eating less fat, you're eating lots of vegetables and fruits and healthy foods, your blood pressure drops. And we just recently published a meta-analysis in JAMA Internal Medicine where we looked at all the studies ever done on blood pressure and plant-based diets, and you can show without a shadow of a doubt that when people get the animal products off their plate, their blood pressure gets healthier, their weight gets healthier. If they've got diabetes, that gets better. If they've got heart disease, that gets better. And we can suggest, oh, no, go on an Atkins diet. Well, that's a mistake. About a third of the people who go on that diet find that their cholesterol levels rise, sometimes to a horrible degree. There was a Florida man, you probably remember his case, where he went on this diet. He had a terrible heart disease as a result of the diet, and he happened to have an angiogram just before and just after all of this went forward, and it was really quite clear that when you go on this low-carb diet and it's high cholesterol and high saturated fat, and you have people telling you, don't worry, the scientists are all wrong, you can do all of this and it won't hurt you, butter and cheese won't hurt you, it's just a ridiculous lie, and people pay the price for this. So it's important to remember, we are not natural carnivores, that vegetables and fruits and whole grains and beans really are the foods that we thrive on. And the closer you get to that kind of diet, the better off you're going to be.
I was going to say, though, because, Nina, one of the things you talk about is that you say that the only food that increases our HDL, known as our good cholesterol, is saturated fat.
Right.
Now,
that's right. I mean, yes. So, I think that the story that, you know, the story about the Florida man is interesting, but, you know, those are anecdotal stories. What you really do is you have to look at the scientific trials, the overall.
But that's what I said.
But Dr. Barnard, let me just finish. Because you need to do science on large numbers of people because there's tremendous range in human variation in response to diet. So you really need to do large clinical trials. And you've done a trial, and that that showed one thing, but I have to say that there is now a body of evidence out there looking that there are dozens of big, long-term, large clinical trials out there now that have been conducted over the last decade comparing a low-fat diet to a high-fat diet, and the high-fat diet always looks better. So there might be some outlier, some Florida man who doesn't do well on that diet, but overall, in terms of the numbers, when you look at scientific trials, the high-fat diet just looks better. And I just want to say something about the history of, you know, this idea that we were once a plant-eating nation. One of the things that I went back to look at the historical data about what Americans used to eat, and you know, looked at rigorous academic texts that went through widows' wills and purchasing and all kinds of historical data to show Americans used to eat 3 to 4 times more red meat than we do today. And you know, if you just think about the growing season in New England, you can't eat plant and vegetables until you know for nearly half the year. I mean, until we had kiwis from New Zealand and, you know, fruit flown in from all over the world, most people just couldn't survive on fruits and vegetables. So it's just not even, that was not our legacy. I mean, Americans used to eat 3 to 4 times more butter, 5 to 6 times more lard. We only ate those were the only two fats used by American housewives before 1900.
Well,
so
Dr. Bernard,
there's a kind of,
let's let him answer.
I think we need a little bit of a reality check here. First of all, when you look at what Americans eat, it has been reported by the USDA what people eat, and they have figures that go back to 1909. And I know that Nina cites this in her book, and she complains about the USDA's figures, but the fact is, if you go back to about 1960, when the figures were, it's pretty hard to argue, they were pretty good figures, your average American at that time was eating about 75 pounds less meat than they do today. And we hit this absurd peak in 2004. Americans were eating 1 million animals per hour. That totaled at 201.5 pounds of meat. It was mostly chicken was the big increase over those years. And cheese went up from less than 4 pounds per person per year a century ago to about 34 pounds per person per year today because of pizza and so forth. This huge influx of meat and cheese has paralleled the rise in obesity. And we do hear people saying, no, go ahead and eat cheese, eat meat, this won't hurt you. There's no question that that sort of diet leads to cancer, leads to diabetes, leads to heart disease. And when people like me, we haven't just done one study, we do lots of studies and we do meta-analyses of all the studies that have been published. It's really very, very clear, abundantly clear, that whatever a person has been eating, if they get the animal products off of their plate, their heart disease tends to improve or even reverses. The likelihood of having a fatal heart attack diminishes. The likelihood of needing to be hospitalized gets better. We have, we're just now concluding a study of people with late-stage diabetes. We use a totally vegan diet, and they do terrific. And if you feel that maybe this is suffering, it's not suffering to have some linguine with seared oyster mushrooms and artichoke hearts, or to start your day with blueberry pancakes or some oatmeal with cinnamon and raisins. And I happened to do a study where I interviewed every single one of Dr. Dean Ornish's patients in his 1990 study. And I asked them how they liked their diet and how could they stick with it. And the answer was they loved it. And they felt that they asked, why have doctors not told them that a plant-based diet could help them lose weight, end their crushing chest pain, and help them to live again? That's what we really need to be, that's the word we need to get out to people.
I was just going to ask you, Dr. Barnard, about that recent clinical trial. This is a novel dietary program, you say, for type 2 diabetes. Can you just tell us more about that? Is that about a plant-based diet?
The work that we have been doing, we've been doing for quite a number of years since the 90s. And what we do is it's just the opposite of typical diabetes diets. When a person is diagnosed with diabetes, they're often told, you've got too much sugar in your blood, so don't eat sugar and don't eat things like bread that will digest to release sugar. But we found that the cause of diabetes has nothing to do with sugar. It has nothing to do with carbohydrate intake. It has to do with the buildup of tiny fat particles inside the muscle cells and inside the liver cells, and that causes insulin not to work anymore. So a vegan diet, a plant-based diet, the benefit of this is it doesn't have any animal fat in it at all, and if we keep oils pretty low, then the only fats that are in the diet are the ones that are natural to the vegetables and fruits and beans and grains that you're eating, which is maybe 10% of calories, pretty low fat. So the fat in the cells starts to diminish. the insulin in your body can function again. And we've seen people who used to have diabetes, and for all intents and purposes, they no longer have it because we are now tackling the cause. That's not everybody. Other people improve. They may still need some medication. But we now believe that this is the best way to tackle type 2 diabetes, is to get the animal products off your plate, keep oils low, and eat healthy amounts of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, and don't worry about the portions. And don't worry, if you're eating healthy carbohydrates, I wouldn't worry about the quantity of it.
Okay, we do need to take another break on today's topical currents. We're speaking with journalist Nita Teicholz, who's written The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. Dr. Neil Barnard, who is an adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine. Linda Gassenheimer and Fred Tasker. We'll be right back. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. And we're visiting with journalist Nita Teicholz, who's written The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. Dr. Neil Barnard, who is an author, health advocate, adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine. Linda Gassenheimer, chef, author, and syndicated columnist, and wine columnist, Fred Tasker.
Right. And we've been talking, Dr. Barnard and Nina Teicholz, about your studies and your feelings and what's happening. But I want to get back to some of what we, the general public, want to do. We want to eat. And what are we going to eat? As I questioned earlier in the program is, you know, do we need to go to extremes? I can't imagine not having a piece of meat, a vegetable, and maybe something else with it, a carbohydrate on my plate. And I think probably most of America does. So I wanted to know, Nina, you mentioned the Mediterranean diet in your book that we hear so much about. In fact, we've heard so much about the Mediterranean diet. I'm not sure what it is. I mean, there's so many different definitions. So why? I think I've understood that you were not for that diet. And could you explain, first of all, define what you mean by the Mediterranean diet and why you're against it?
I'm not against the Mediterranean diet. But I want to say, in answer to your question first, just why it is that all diets work a little bit, and why... And to sort of equal the playing field for all diets. When you go on a diet and you try to improve your health, you are always told to cut out desserts and sweets. And one of the things, and cutting out sugar, high fructose corn syrup, produces results for everybody. And I think it's also important to just talk for a second about how, for people who are normally lean and not struggling with their health, for them, they can eat a diet, you know, whatever suits them, a balanced diet, a diet in moderation, the foods they like. But we're talking more, you know, there's so much sickness in America and obesity. So the question is, how do we help them? You know, the low-fat diet has been the diet that has been prescribed to Americans for the last 50 years. That diet has clearly not worked. I mean, we have complied with that. We've decreased our saturated fats by 11% over the last 30 years. We've increased our carbohydrates by 25% over that time. We've increased our fruits and vegetables by 17% over the last 30 years. And we are fatter and sicker for that. And so it seems like our working hypothesis of a low-fat diet is simply not working.
Well, what about...
And as a result... Wait, can I just... I want to just finish sketching out the history a little bit.
I just want to answer my question because I want to know what's for supper.
I do want to get to that too. But so in response to that low-fat diet not working, there have been a number of other ideas proposed. And that's just to give you the historical outline. So out of that frustration with the low-fat diet came the Dean Ornish very low-fat diet idea. His idea was always, we're just not low-fat enough. And I just have to insert that his study was only on 21 people. So, and that's the foundation for all of his work. So it's a surprisingly slender bit of evidence there. I just also out of the low fat diet also came the idea of that was also when Atkins came up. And then also the Mediterranean diet also was proposed as a solution to the low fat diet, because the Mediterranean diet was actually very high in olive oil. It was 40% of calories is olive oil. And that diet was proposed by Harvard nutritionists in 1993. as a good solution than it was a higher fat diet. I think the Mediterranean diet is great, and it's definitely better than a low fat diet. And the critique I offer in my book is just that, you know, I think people really think that the evidence for that diet is there, when in fact it was really the olive oil industry that funded a series of the most fabulous ever food conferences.
Fine. I think, Nina, we've got your idea of this, but I think let's let Dr. Bernard answer.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Dr. Dean Ornish, in my view, is a tremendous researcher, has done a huge body of work. And I've read your book, Nina, and you do say that he's basing his research on 20 people. What you're referring to is back 25 years ago, he did, I think his second major trial had about that number of people in the experimental group, because he did very in-depth investigations on them that were extremely expensive. And that was the group where I actually interviewed the individuals who were thrilled with the diet, and they got great results, and their chest pain disappeared like magic. But I have in front of me one of Dr. Ornish's studies that had 2,974 men and women in it, and it was published in 2010. He has done many, many studies. They are elegantly done. They are very carefully done. They are published in the top journals, and that is why Medicare now says, if you are eating ribs and chicken and these kinds of things, if you're doing an Atkins diet and you have heart disease and you want to do a vegetarian diet to reverse your heart disease and get better, Medicare will pay for that because it works. And that's why Bill Clinton went on this diet, to save his life. And he didn't just reverse his heart disease, but he lost a lot of weight. He looks better than he's looked in years. And that's why Al Gore does the same kind of diet now. It's this. The evidence is overwhelming. But what's for dinner? You're
Thank you.
What's for dinner?
I'm getting hungry now. This is lunchtime, whatever.
What's for dinner? If I like, when we're thinking about what is healthful to eat, I'd like to think international. So let's say we go to an Italian restaurant. They'd say, start me off with a nice green salad, fair enough. You can put the cucumbers and olives all over it if you want to. This is not zero fat. There's some fat in the olives and whatnot. Bring me a soup. Lentil soup, pasta fagioli, minestrone. They're all vegetarian. They're all great. And when my pasta comes, to my surprise, even plain old white pasta happens to have a very low glycemic index. And the big issue is, are you going to top it with junk, or like cream sauce, Alfredo sauce, meat sauce, which you don't want to do, but top it with artichoke hearts, seared oyster mushrooms, tomato chunks, little hot peppers in there. If you want to have the espresso for dessert, knock yourself off, and no one is counting calories.
What about
go Chinese, go Japanese, go Mexican, all of these cuisines have wonderful foods based on simple ingredients.
Let's get down to my meal again, your Italian meal. If I want to have a piece of veal with that, with a little marsala sauce on it, I don't think that... are we saying that that's bad for me? I'm having a balanced meal.
That is what I'm saying, yes. Now, if you said to me, I'm not going to eat any of that until I'm 115 years old and I'm going to have one meal that has meat in it, nobody's going to say that that's going to have any effect. But when that is part of a person's regular diet, we know from both the observational studies as well as the clinical trials where when people have illnesses and we take that out of their diet, they do get better. Now, if a person says, who cares, I'm a healthy person, it's important that we understand several things. First of all, a third of women are going to get cancer. Half of men are going to get cancer. A third of people born since the year 2000 are going to get type 2 diabetes. Almost all of that is diet-related. Virtually every teenager has the beginnings of heart disease right now. That should not happen, but it is happening because of the cheese and the meat and the junk in their diets. And if I could wave a magic wand and serve those children vegetable chili instead of meat chili, oatmeal with cinnamon raisins instead of the bacon and eggs, we could save the lives of those kids. They would have to learn something new in the same way that our generation had to learn that smoking, even in moderation, was a bad idea. We fought against it. We didn't want to do it. We had people just like Nina saying, don't worry, an occasional cigar is part of life. Enjoy it and light it up. Well, that is a mistake. And we don't fool around with the health of our kids and our loved ones.
Can I ask, we haven't heard anything about lifestyle and in the studies. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, where does exercise come in and how does that factor in? And studies done in the early 1900s, I'm thinking to myself, well, those people probably walked to work. They never, you know, they didn't ride around in their
car.
They
didn't sit behind a computer all
day.
They
weren't on a screen all day, as everyone is today. So has any of that been factored into all these studies to say, what should we be doing?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of evidence.
Go ahead, Nina.
Yeah, I think so. It's also true that our grandmothers weren't jogging and there weren't gyms. So there was, you know,
they were cleaning house and didn't have a vacuum cleaner.
They were
probably
cleaning
washed
their
clothes by hand.
They did, but there were a lot of office jobs in the early 1900s too, and that was, you know, it was post-industrial revolution, and that was before the epidemics of diabetes and obesity and heart disease. And also, you know, 100 years earlier, Americans may have been working more on the farms, but they also were eating. The reality was they were eating, as they were in the Mediterranean, 3 to 4 times more meat. They were having butter and lard also before the epidemics of cancer, obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. So those are historical realities that make it hard to, it's just hard to jive with the, you know, the vegan diet to explain how we have all these chronic diseases that have become epidemics in this century that didn't exist when we ate far, far more animal products. I mean, we Americans used to eat very little vegetable products, if you go back and look through all those historical documents. So, you know,
I'm looking at the exact data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Yeah, but that data from the early, but Dr. Bernard, that early data from anything before 1950 was widely considered by people in the field to be virtually worthless. It didn't include anything that was grown locally on a farm. If I milked my cow, if
I
ate anything out of my, but nobody uses the experts in the field consider. I'm just saying experts in the field consider that to be worthless data. So you have to reach back before.
Even by your standards, if you look at back at 1960, it is not true that people ate more meat back in 1960 than they do today. Meat consumption in 1960 was far below current standards.
But that's an arbitrary date.
Ever since World War II, it's steadily increased. Cheese went way, way up. And it's unfortunately become, don't get me wrong, I am not suggesting that America was healthy back in the 1900s. We weren't. Compared to Japan and other countries, we were in terrible shape compared to them.
No,
we had a worse
disease.
There
was no obesity. There was no diabetes. There was no cancer.
You're saying there was none of that in 1960?
Are you saying that?
This is all imaginary.
In the 19th century, you find me evidence of heart attacks. There were textbooks written on it. People understood. They diagnosed it. There was a great understanding of heart disease, but it was extremely rare until the 1920s, and then it became an epidemic. And
okay.
I should also add that,
just
you know,
trying
without,
to clear up one myth at a time. Americans' meat intake has dramatically increased over recent decades, up until 2004.
Association, Dr. Barnard. Association, not causation.
I think we need to tackle each of them. The point that I'm making is that meat has gone up, cheese has gone way, way up, chicken has gone way up, and if you're saying that a low-fat diet, which is so horrible, is a chicken diet, I agree with you. A chicken diet is not going to save anybody's life. That's certainly true. And when people say, well, let's switch you from beef to chicken and hopefully that will help you, that's a mistake. That's not going to get them anywhere. That's like switching to low-tar cigarettes. But we know that the more meat people have eaten over time, the worse they've gotten. We know that meat eaters do substantially worse than vegetarians. And we know in clinical trials that are controlled for exercise and other factors, which is what we do, to answer your question, Linda, that we say, no, we're not going to change exercise or anything else, and we track people. When you get these things out of their diet, their arteries open up again, their insulin sensitivity starts to come back, their need for medication diminishes. I had a man named Vance here who, his father was dead by age 30. Vance was 31 when he was diagnosed with diabetes. His diabetes went away for all intents and purposes. That won't happen to everybody, but virtually everybody sees an improvement in that direction, either partially or all the way. And the thing that worries me as a physician is if we lie to our patients and say, you can smoke in moderation or have butter and meat and that's okay, and if you have it 3 or 4 times a week, that's just as good as skipping it. It just isn't really true. And if you don't care about your own health, that's your life. But if it's your children or if it's your radio listeners, or if it's your spouse, or anybody else you care about. The truth is that when people get away from animal products, they do dramatically better. We're not going to live forever,
okay,
but you have the best chance of being in a healthy
weight
and
children,
good health.
Children is a
we need
children.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we've got to go to a break. We'll come back,
okay.
We promise. Okay.
We'll be right back. And welcome back to our very healthy discussion about fat and eating and what we should and shouldn't eat. We are speaking with journalist Nina Teicholz, who's written The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. With a differing view is Dr. Neil Barnard, who is a nutrition researcher, author, health advocate, and adjunct associate professor of medicine at George Washington University. And Linda Gassenheimer, chef, author, syndicated columnist, and wine columnist, Fred Tasker.
And now I'm going to give my dinner in minutes ideas out, and Fred's going to talk a little bit about wine. But when we come back after that, perhaps Nina and Dr. Barnard, you could think of your conclusion, okay?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Well, summer officially starts this weekend, and so today's dinner is a light summer supper. It's poached chicken with fresh tomato mayonnaise sauce and a rice salad, and poaching this chicken makes it really soft and juicy. Now, you can see that whole recipe at dinnerinminutes.com with a photograph, and it's there for you to look at. Fred, I think we need a glass of wine right about now. Are you with us, Fred? Have we lost him?
Have we lost Fred?
I guess we've lost him. So in that case, Fred was going to talk to us about his summer wine suggestions, and we'll just put that up on the website as well.
Okay.
Let's go back to our conclusions here.
Okay, we will go to the conclusions, but one thing is Dr. Barnard mentioned about children, mm-hmm, making our children unhealthy, and I know that Nina was going to say something right there, because one of the things that you claim, Nina, is that it endangers children's health, the likes of a low-fat,
yeah,
diet. So why don't you go from there and give each of you, we have about 5 minutes left, so
okay,
yes, go ahead.
All right, so this is children is really important way into this, because those original dietary recommendations to cut back on saturated fat and fat were designed for middle-aged men to fight heart disease. And then they were extended to women and children who had never been studied. There was no data on them. And, you know, and at the time, there were pediatricians who said, well, how are we to assume that the needs of the growing child are the same as the octogenarian? And there was a lot of resistance to including children, but they have been included in our low-fat diet. When they were finally tested, almost 40 years after they had already been on this diet, it was discovered that children on a low-fat diet suffer from nutritional deficiencies. And that's because fat, when you cut back on fat, you're cutting back on animal foods. Those animal foods are incredibly nutritionally dense, actually. They are full of vitamins and minerals that you can't, you know, vitamin B6 and B12, you can't get anywhere else. That's why Dr. Barnard suggests taking a vitamin B12 supplement on his diet. You can get that naturally in animal food. Folate, selenium, zinc, those are all iron. They're all very dense and more bioavailable in animal foods, meaning they're more, you can digest them and absorb them into your system more easily. Vitamins A, D, E, and K are fat soluble. You can only digest them when they come with the fat. So like non-fat milk, if you're drinking that, you can't get those vitamins. And then if you don't have those vitamins, you can't absorb the minerals in milk. And you can't absorb the calcium, because that becomes insoluble calcium soaps in your intestine instead. So the fat is a vitally important part of getting all those minerals and vitamins that you need, that are so much more densely concentrated and, again, more bioavailable in animal foods. And when children or anybody cuts back on those foods, then it's harder for them to keep their diet nutritionally adequate. That was shown in a number of studies on children. And also for children, children who are on low-fat diets, like, you know, below 25% fat, their growth starts faltering. In a number of experiments that they did with children whose growth was faltering, the only thing they had to give them to repair and restore their growth was milk, whole milk, or butter. And that was used to be considered miracle foods, because they could restore growth in children. So these foods are, they're incredibly, they're nutritionally rich and dense, and they are, that we have been avoiding them because we have believed that the saturated fats in them cause heart disease.
Okay, so
Dr. Barnard and I could go back and forth.
Right. Yes, we may have forever to agree to disagree, but Dr. Barnard, yes, go ahead.
I want your conclusion, Dr. Barnard, please.
All right, very quickly. Children who are raised on plant-based diets are the healthiest kids on the block because vitamins are by and large not in meat to a great degree. There isn't any vitamin C in meat, for example. But the vegetables and fruits, those are the foods that are particularly rich in vitamins and minerals. It is true you should take a B12 supplement, but that's really true of everybody. The final thing is that as research is going on, we're discovering more and more problems with meat, and the latest one is Alzheimer's disease, and we've talked about this before. Researchers in Chicago showed that the more saturated fat and trans fats, either one, that you're eating, the higher your risk of developing Alzheimer's. So a plant-based diet is the way to go, not just for diabetes and heart disease, but for other conditions as well. So if people are interested in trying this, I hope that they'll try our Kickstart program that we have here at the Physicians Committee. If I can mention it, it's at pcrm.org. In English, Spanish, Mandarin, and also a program for people from India, will actually help you to start a plant-based diet. You can try it out for yourself. That's pcrm.org.
We'll have a link to pcrm.org, which is the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, on our website when we, and also we'll have a link to Nina Teicholz's book. She's a journalist, investigative journalist, and it's called The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. And Dr. Barnard is a nutrition researcher, author, health advocate, and adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine. Of course, Linda Gassenheimer is our friend, chef, author,
she's
syndicated columnist.
She did mention friend earlier. Thank you, Bonnie.
I didn't, but of course you are. And of course, we're sorry we lost Fred, but
right,
we'll have him back next
and
week.
And I think this is a conversation that's going to continue and continue. And I'm quite sure they're not saying we're going to slather our bagels with tons of cream cheese and have tons and tons of fat. I think both doctors, both Nina and Dr. Barnard, are thinking in terms of a healthy eating lifestyle.
Exactly. Well, we want to thank you all for joining us today, and we hope it was a healthy discussion.
It was great. I'm so glad you hosted this. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Barnard.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. And that's our program for today. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. Our producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction from our online producer, Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. More information, links, and photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. And you can follow me on Twitter at Bonnie Berman. Tomorrow at this time, please join Ed Bell for another edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We return on Monday with award-winning journalist Michael Harris. He's written The End of Absence, Reclaiming What We've Lost in a World of Constant Connection. Bonnie Berman, hoping your day and weekend are good ones. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.